Comic Timing
is a proud member
of the Comics Podcast Network.
Bitch.
Print it.
Welcome to episode 130 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brent Cassina, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Friend of the show, Jamal Igel, returns as we discuss his latest comic book work, The Ray, with Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray. Yes, I am aware that rhymed. We also talk about Justice League Doom, a little bit about Dwayne McDuffie, 1 year later, and we deviate into some of Jamal Igel's upcoming independent work. He wants to rock and roll all night and party every day. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 130 of Comic Timing. We've got another round number here on Comic Timing, and hey, eventually we'll get to 150, by the year 2015 or 2020 or something like that. Mr. Brent Cassina joins us once again from his home in Florida, and what the hell is a Vine Netters? That's what I want to know, man. Did you even notice that misspelling on Facebook earlier today? Like, you posted on my community post, like, instead of they better, thy netters.
Oh, it's on my iPad, dude. Sorry. That's all I got to say for myself.
Man, that's what I like to call Apple fingers. that boisterous laugh in the background is Mr. Jamal Igel joining us once again for the first time in a while.
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
Going well, man. Going well. And I can no longer say DC exclusive, but you're a free man. You're a free man.
This is true. This is very,
set
very
Jamal
true.
Set Jamal free. Set Jamal free.
Oh, wait. It's still Black History Month. Maybe we should stop.
Oh. Wow. And we're off to a booming start already. It's already Brent Cassina versus Jamal Igel, and we just started.
No. This is actually funny. One of my best buds at work is his name's Mike, and we're going out for drinks the other day, and he's like, "Are you buying drinks tonight?" I was like, "Why? What for? It's not your birthday." He was like, "Dude, it's Black History Month." I was like, "Oh, come on." I was like, "When did they start doing that?"
Saying something like that is like saying up you're giving up caviar for Lent. You know, like.
I should start using that as an excuse more. Like, dude, that's my sister. Hey, it's Black History Month.
But you have 8 J's, Jamal. 8 J's until it's no good.
And this episode of Comic Timing is sponsored, as always, by DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service. Check them out at dcbservice.com. We've taken a little bit of a break on our review corner picks for the last 2 months. However, there are some deals that I do want to point out on the site this month. In particular, Batman Earth 1 has officially been solicited. This is 50% off for $11.49 as Gary Frank and Jeff Johns write a brand new origin for Batman taking place in the Earth 1 concept. Superman Earth 1 was pretty good. Let's see how this one rolls. All 6 issues of the second wave of DC Comics this month are only 50% off. They are $9.97. So you will be able to get all of the new books that have been announced. That's Earth 2 number 1, World's Finest number 1, Batman Incorporated number 1, Dial H number 1, GI Combat number 1, and The Ravagers number 1 for 50% off. Regular price is $19.94. You're paying $9.97. You cannot beat that anywhere. Nick Fury Max relaunches this month over at Marvel. 50% off for $1.99. The Kick-Ass 2 Premium Hardcover is out. 40% off for $14.99. Star Wars Darth Vader Ghost Prison number 1 of 5. $1.75. 50% off. So many good deals to be found at DCBS. And they've been supporting us for a long time. And we love them. We love them, and I cannot wait to order this month as a lot of good stuff is there. Use the promo code CT8 if you're a first-time user to get an 8% off on your first order. So that's 8% more that you'll be getting. Plus, if you buy your books on Comixology via DCBS's digital store, you will get even more off on your DCBS order. I mean, really, the discounts are everywhere. Go ahead and check them out. DCBService.com. We thank them for their support of Comic Timing.
Well, before we get into Jamal's current work and his future work, we're going to deviate a little bit. As I got to see at the Paley Center premiere this last week, the Justice League Doom premiere, which, as we all know, is Mr. Dwayne McDuffie's final work. And it's now been a year, actually today is a year, since the tragic passing of Mr. Dwayne McDuffie. Very sudden, no one was expecting it, and then it went ahead and happened. But I got to see his last work, and I'd like to share with both of you that it's pretty damn good. I mean, it has some of the usual trappings that that happen with these direct-to-video releases, is that, you know, there's a couple things here and there that got changed from the original release, but some of them for the better, some of them, you know, for the worse. But it's not because of Dwayne, it's because of the piece itself. I thought it holds up pretty well and is probably now in about my top five of these direct-to-DVD releases. It's pretty damn good.
So on par with what, basically?
I'd say it's right up there. Well, it's definitely better than the Crisis of Two Worlds. Definitely better than that, because this one doesn't feel nearly as shoehorned as that one did. Because I mean, like, that one was we all know, a Justice League movie that was then, you know, converted into something that had nothing to do with Justice League Unlimited or Justice League at all. This one is just a Mark Waid story that's been adapted. And we go from there. And yeah, they did sort of shoehorn in Cyborg into the piece, because I guess they figured, hey, new DCU, let's roll with the current Justice League. But no Aquaman for some reason. That was probably the most surprising thing of all of it. Like, you have all the current Justice League, only you have Martian Manhunter in there and no Aquaman. But I guess there was no talking to fish to be had in the movie.
They didn't anticipate him outselling every Marvel comic in January. Yeah. I guess
it's very possible. Yeah, and oh my god, to that still.
Aquaman, you're finally popular.
He outsold Wolverine. What?
it only took the creative team of Yvonne Hayes and Jeff Johns to do it.
Yeah, really. Like, I mean, you could put those guys on like Wonder Dog, and they would probably sell a decent amount of books.
This is true. This is true. So, no, not that it's a bad book at all. It's actually really good. But, you know, again, I'm sorry to kind of say it like this, but you put an A-list creative team on, you know, at the best a C-list character, and you're surprised that it's going to sell.
Right. No, it's truth. It's truth, man. And going back to the piece a little bit, probably my one major complaint about it is that because there was no Jon Stewart, it was a reunion of almost the entire Justice League cast except for Phil Lamarr.
And
that felt a little disappointing, because considering that Phil Lamarr has got to work with Dwayne so many times in the past, I would have loved to have seen them, you know, at least found a role from somewhere. Like, I mean, have him voice Cyborg, have him voice at least somebody in the cast.
Well, who's the voice of Cyborg?
The voice of Cyborg, I think, is actually the same voice that voiced him in the Teen Titans Go cartoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Who was Martian Manhunter in this movie?
Carl Lumley. Yeah, Carl Lumley. Yeah, the same Justice League voice. Basically, everybody.
Oh, he did do Justice League?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't recall.
Yeah. Pretty much everybody except for Tim Daly instead of George Newbern, and they had Hal Jordan, so they got Nathan Fillion instead of Phil Lamarr. Other than that, it's the entire cast from Justice League returning. And that was my biggest disappointment in the entire piece. Other than that, it flowed well. There was some good humor in the piece. The animation works pretty well for a direct to video, and I felt overall it's going to be pretty satisfying for most people who read a Tower of Babel.
Really? Because it looked like they skewed away from Tower of Babel.
You know, not as much as you would think, actually. Because, I mean, other than changing the lead villain, and, I mean, whatever, I'm spoiling a 15-year-old book here, whatever. But no, instead of having Ra's al Ghul, they have the Legion of Doom in this. And they play a very similar role in the end to what Ra's al Ghul did. Even Batman's fate is pretty similar, and a lot of the same developments occur to the different members of the Justice League. And they actually wind up using as a way to get Hal in, instead of using the what they used for Kyle in the original piece, which was, you know, Kyle goes blind because, of course, you know, what do you do to a Green Lantern to take away his creativity, especially an artist? You take away his sight. And you cripple him. With Hal, they used something very similar to what they used for Aquaman in the original piece. They used a fear serum, you know, Scarecrow's fear serum to leave him doubting himself and unable to use his ring. So that worked pretty well in the end. So, yeah, no, they managed to actually do a very good job of staying as close to the original while still skewing, because, you know, it put it this way, it's not Justice League, it's not Superman Doomsday here, okay? It's not one of those pieces that feels like it's nothing to do with the original at all, and they're just creating a new story. This one was pretty close in the end. So, you guys will probably wind up enjoying it.
Cool. I'm actually looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah. And plus, we got to see it with the Q&A afterwards with Batman himself, which is always good. And
Christian Bale?
No. The one that you actually understand when he talks.
Yeah, I understand Christian Bale. What are you talking
about? So do
about?
I. I've heard people complain about that for years. It's just like, it doesn't make any sense. I understood it perfectly in both movies.
What are you talking about?
take the cotton out of your goddamn ears.
I'm sorry, man.
It makes a lot more sense than, at least in the real world, than talking the same that Bruce Wayne does. That's all I got to say.
All right. I'll give you that.
Careless whisper.
Yeah, it was 1 year. You know, he's Batman for like 1 year, basically. So we'll see if the voice changes in the third movie.
But yeah,
it's had 8 years to refine it.
The best part about hearing Kevin Conroy talk in real life is that you notice that his regular voice is Bruce Wayne.
Right.
But then, you know, when he gets the gravel in there, you know, he immediately becomes Batman. Like, you could just close your eyes and you're immediately taken back to Batman. And the other guys who were there were Andrea Romano, who has been, you know, vocal director for like every single animated ever in the history of man. Mm-hmm. Seriously, we were watching DuckTales the other day and we saw Andrea Romano's name and I'm like, dude,
oh, yeah,
that's awesome.
She's been around forever.
She has. And Phil Morris was the other one who showed up because he plays Vandal Savage in the piece.
That's cool.
Yeah, so he gets to reprise as Vandal Savage.
Is he the guy that was in Smallville as Manhunter?
He was. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's Phil Morris. So Phil Morris, that's the gangly-looking black dude, the voice of Kratos, right?
You know, I'm not sure, actually.
I think he is.
Okay.
I remember seeing him, like, in his face in real life, and I was like, wait a second.
Well, no,
that's Kratos?
You just confused the two. Phil Morris was Martian Manhunter. Phil Lamar is the one you're thinking of, I'm pretty sure.
But that's the one who you guys were complaining about, right?
Yes. Phil Morris is in this as Vandal Savage. Phil Lamar is the one that we wish was actually in it.
Yes, yeah, so for those few non, in-depth geeks, you know, who are listening to the show, Phil Morris was Jackie Childs on Seinfeld.
Yes. That's where most people know him from. and Phil Morris is a huge comic nerd. Like,
yeah,
he has thousands of comics in his comic room, and he was rolling, like, rattling off issues that he's known over the years, and like, he's geeking out about playing Vandal Savage again because he, you know, he's been reading Vandal for years, and like, dude, I get to play in a freaking immortal. How awesome is that?
Did he play Vandal Savage in a mock time? Because that would make sense if they were bringing back, you know, everybody from almost everybody from Justice League Unlimited. It would make sense.
Yes. No, he did. He was the Justice League voice of Vandal Savage. Yes. You know, he got to play against George Newbern in one of the best Justice League episodes of all time.
Right.
Where Superman gets flung into the far future and Lobo joins the Justice League. Enough said. But that was a lot of fun. I would totally recommend that everybody go out and get it when it's available. I know it's available for download either now or by the end of this week, and it's going to be available on DVD and Blu-ray and all that jazz. So go ahead and see that. And as we reflect quickly on a year later from Dwayne McDuffie, what sticks with you the most, Jamal, about Dwayne's legacy and how it affects comic books even today?
Well, that's kind of a loaded question because it's sort of twofold for me, because not only do I miss the creative voice of the man, but I also miss Dwayne
right.
as a friend. And it's, you know, it's still weird not knowing that I'm not going to run into him at San Diego or at another show.
Yeah.
But, but I think that Dwayne, you know, and particularly, like, you know, for, you know, being a black creator in comics, it's also a big deal, because I think Dwayne was probably one of the highest profiled, you know, black creators, let alone black, like, comic book writers working in the industry. You know, and the success that he had over multiple platforms for so long is always going to leave, like, this really lasting, enduring legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I miss the man, and I miss the honesty that he had about, you know, what it was like to be, you know, a black writer working in comics and having to put up with all the bullshit that we have to put up with sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, just in general.
Well, I'm sure he would be proud of Batwing right now, in particular, being as popular as it is over at DC, and the fact that there seem to be at least slowly but surely more black characters getting the spotlight at DC specifically, and hopefully over time Marvel will get the hint and get a few more in there as well.
Yeah, well, one could hope, but there could always be more.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there could always be more of a lot of things. There could be more female characters. There could be more, you know, just more genres. But you know, I'm not drunk enough for that rant yet. So
get a few more beers in you, and then we'll get rolling on that. Yeah, Brett, is there anything you'd like to add about Dwayne in particular and the legacy he lives?
No, I mean, I liked his work, and I liked his run on Justice League the most. As mainly the comic work of his that I read. It was a shame that it was cut short, because it was going some interesting places. Mm-hmm. And I dig the stuff he did for the DC Animated U. So, you know, appreciate the man's work and his talent. It's a shame he's gone.
Yeah, hear, hear. I will sip my Hebrew Genesis ale in his honor right now. And you can't get more Jewish than Hebrew Genesis ale. All right. So moving on from the slightly sad to a little happier, yeah. So true or false, Jamal Igel, the Ray was created just to make Raphael Suhu happy.
Oh wait, I thought that was the return of what was that, the something Hawk from Marvel? I thought that was
Dark Hawk.
Dark Hawk, right.
Oh man, yo! I'm telling you, when I picked up issue one and I flipped through it, I got about three pages in. I'm like, all right, I'm sold. You got me, man. You got me with this. It's like everything I love about characters like Kyle Rayner and Jason Rush, Firestorm, and even a little bit of Blue Beetle in there. Like this, both the art and the writing is just so on par. I'm it's just fun, man.
Oh, thanks, man. It was a fun series to work on. You know, it was good to work with Jimmy and Justin. It was good to work with Rich Parada. It was good to work with Quanta and Sarah. And you know, it was cool. You know, I ended up having a lot of fun on it.
And did you get to create the character design or?
Well, okay, yes, but with a lot of help from Cully Hammer.
Okay.
And basically, what had happened was they had initially asked Cully, because he was doing a lot of the design work for the new 52, they had approached him about doing a design first. But I think his first pass, they weren't too crazy about, and they wanted him to go in a different direction. But Cully was, you know, being as busy as he was, didn't have the time and just couldn't do it. So they basically said, okay, well, let's get Jamal in on the design process and see what, you know, see what he wants. The way he wants to do. Mm-hmm. So Cully and I, like, for the better part of a day, were going back and forth over different passes for the costume. I came up with like an initial idea based off of Jimmy's notes. Mm-hmm. And we were going through colors, like different color permutations and symbols, and, you know, talking about, you know, the different types of design elements that we can incorporate into it. And we came up with a version that was very close to what we ended up with, that everybody seemed to really like. Mm-hmm. But what ended up happening was this was on a Friday, and Jimmy hadn't had a chance to look at it and chime in. Mm-hmm. So when we heard from Jimmy on Monday, he said he thought it looked a little bit too busy. So then I came up with the version that, you know, that ended up in the book.
Right.
So, and everybody was happy with it. So it really was like me and Cully, you know, collaborating and, you know, coming up with like a base idea, and then me taking that base idea and refining it a little bit more.
Nice. Yeah, well, I like how streamlined the costume looks too. Like the symbol on the front is I think very, very striking. It's like it's simple yet sticks out.
Well, if anybody who's seen any other design work, I mean, particularly with like Jason Rush on Firestorm, and with, you know, when I redesigned Vigilante, and a bunch of the other, you know, things that I've designed over the years, there's two things that I'm very much about. I'm very much about graphic, about big striking graphics, simple symmetry, mm-hmm. in terms of design. You know, a striking element, like a striking graphic element that's not too complicated but easily identifiable, that can transfer over to, you know, other media. You know, when the, you know, again, like the initial idea that we had come up with for the symbol was a sort of like a graphic representation of a Hadrian Collider. Mm-hmm. Because we were playing on the whole idea that he was got his powers from a particle beam, so we were kind of playing with that. So it was sort of like this round purple and yellow symbol floating within a field of glowing white. So when I redesigned it, I just decided, okay, well, let me just pare that down to something a little bit more, a little simpler, that was easy to draw, because that's the big thing. Mm-hmm. With costumes, especially, like, if you're going to have, especially if you're going to be the artist on it, if I'm designing something for somebody else, I don't give a crap. I'll you know, put buckles and
more pouches.
And yes, more pouches and shoulder pads and, and whatever. But if I've got to draw something for, you know, 4 issues in a row, I'm going to make it as easy as possible.
Nice.
Okay, now I have a question.
Okay.
When on the CGS community and on the forums and stuff like that, you know, when the new 52 was announced and we're all going, "Where's Jamal?" Were you sitting back cackling like, "Just wait, my friends," or is this
something that came along later on? This came along later on. I didn't know what I was doing yet. It made it harder because, you know, I was getting inundated with questions as the announcements were rolling out. I kept getting inundated with questions all over the place. Like, how come, what are you doing? You know, how come I was, you know, and at that point I was still working on Superman. Right. So I didn't know what I was doing yet.
Okay. Gotcha. And then, in issue number one, did you draw yourself being saved by the ray?
Yes, I did.
Ah, I knew it.
I freaking saw that and immediately thought, all right, you have totally Mary Sued yourself into an issue, but I'm okay with that.
I reread 1 and 2 on my iPad today, and I saw that, and I was like, that's got to be Jamal. And then I liked in number 2 how you have your little Eagle signature on, like, yeah, the back of a coffee house and stuff. You know, it's neat, man. I like it. I dig it.
Thanks.
He totally drew that just to have something to put on his wall. I know it.
Yeah. And could someone please tell DC that there are digital readers that aren't lapsed readers, or that there are people who have gone completely digital?
Right.
I keep hearing that, oh, that no such thing exists and most of it is like rebuys and stuff. No, absolutely not. I am one of those guys that's totally digital now.
DC's still trying. They don't know what the hell they're doing with this stuff. They're still trying to figure it out.
Everybody is, though. I mean, everybody's trying to figure it out. It's not even just DC. I mean, Marvel's there, and Dark Horse and Image and all those guys are still trying to figure the digital space out.
No, Marvel's still supposed to have all their stuff digital by March, but I haven't seen anything been added recently.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And it's going to be a few more years. I mean, nobody's really found a way to monetize it yet, monetize monthly comics yet. So,
oh yeah. No, and like, I mean, we wound up with a Samsung Galaxy Tab,
right.
And it, I mean, comics look fantastic on that thing. If you,
yeah,
you know, you're able to just scroll it past, go panel by panel if you really want to, and mm-hmm. it's a really fun way to read it. It's just, the content has to be there in order for you to completely switch it over, you know? I mean,
true.
I mean, it's difficult. Like, okay, mind you, I already wait a month because with DCBS, it takes me a month to get stuff. But
right.
if you're like building that into the system already and telling me that you have to wait a month, at least a month or two on everything so that it'll be cheaper than what you're initially paying, I mean, I guess I'll wind up doing that if I wind up going digital because, I mean, I still can't see myself spending $1.99 for a digital issue or $2.99 for a digital issue when I can get $2.99 for the issue itself.
Well, here's the problem is that there are not enough readers, regular readers of comics who know that comics are available or people who are even interested in comics who know that these books are available to make the price point any lower.
Right.
Yeah, we've kind of lost all the readers that would have made it affordable. Had we had digital comics in the 90s, it would have been, you know, affordable because we had so many readers. It's just the attrition of the market, I guess.
Well, it's the attrition of the market coupled with the availability of technology. The technology really wasn't there. Not in the way it is now.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah. I mean, back then you had Marvel's site. I mean, I remember Marvel had a digital initiative back in the 90s because I used to read comics on
Marvel's
site.
Yeah, I read a lot of the Ultimate line on there.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, obviously that was more the 2000s. But by that point, they had a pretty cool site. It's just like all of a sudden it just magically disappeared one day. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm not reading stuff online anymore. And then you didn't hear anything until Comixology, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, up until that point, you had like CD magazines, basically.
Right.
You know, I had a friend of mine who used to run a CD-ROM magazine called Digital Culture Stream, and you know, he did fairly well with it for a while. But I mean, you know, other than that, there really wasn't that much more that you could do with the available technology at the time. And now, you know, the kind of stuff that he was doing with Digital Culture Stream, you know, Champion's doing with their app. But even then, I mean, I don't know how well that's doing. I think the fact that they've got, you know, was Ralph Cirillo backing them, mm-hmm. you know, that makes it a little bit, you know, less of a burden to produce monetarily.
Right. Yeah, go ahead, Brent.
So if anybody should be happy, it should be the colorists because there's no longer the, you know, misprinting or you get the darkened page. And one thing I certainly don't miss is getting my issues and then opening up and there's that itty-bitty bit of glue on the spine. I don't know if it's glue or some sort of like other residue from the printing plant that, you know, you try and open it to view it all the way and then it tears it and I'm like, ah. I certainly don't miss that.
Oh God, my favorite thing of late has been that one guy who's been bitching about the DC Omnibus.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, this is how Marvel opens up. It always lays flat, and then here's DC that closes. We see that. It sucks. Like, you don't have to post 7 YouTube videos about it.
Is
like,
there somebody actually posting YouTubes about
yes,
this?
Yes, yeah. Yes, there
it's
is.
On, if you're following Bleeding Cool a lot, you'll.
If you're listening to this person who's doing this, get a fucking life.
I love you, Jamal.
Courtesy Jamal Eichel. Artist on the ring.
Fantastic, fantastic. Hey, here's my main question about the Ray, man. How fun is it to draw a naked guy? Well, I mean, you gotta have really good placement of that dinner plate.
Oh God! I read that in the script. That's the funniest fucking thing. Honestly, I saw that in the script. I was like, okay, this is made for me. This is completely made for me.
Oh my God!
I don't know if you guys noticed, but in issue one, when he's on the beach in Seattle at the park, and when the girls point down to his dingus, and
yeah, they didn't give the typical Asian reaction.
No. God.
They're like, oh, yeah, nice.
No, but in the back of that panel, there's a girl with a digital camera taking a snapshot of his ass.
Oh, I just saw it, yeah. That's going on my Facebook wall.
But see, that was what was fun about doing the series is that, you know, that Jimmy and Justin gave me just... free reign to just stick whatever I wanted in to make it work, you know?
Well, this is part of that whole, DC new thing, how, like, you can go a completely different direction with a character if you really want to. And, I mean, obviously, Palmiotti and Gray have written versions of the Ray before, whether it be in Freedom Fighters or whether it be in, you know, miniseries and stuff like that. But, I mean, this guy is completely different, and personality-wise is completely different as well. And I think that's what really, threw me in on this, is that this was almost like what you would get in the old days of the Tangent universe. Like, this is right. A completely different version of the Ray. It happens to have the same name, completely different character. Go from there.
Right. But I think that was because DC basically said, I mean, they would have been just as happy, I think, doing something with, you know, Ray Terrell or a new version of Happy Terrell. But DC basically said, you know, we want you to, you know, think outside the box and come up with something new. Now, you know, whether that works in the long run, you know, who's to say? I mean, you know, we've had like the typical bitching as well by people who were, you know, fans of Ray or Happy, or, you know, wanted Ray to come. Yeah, seriously.
A fan of Ray and Happy.
Look, there's a guy who's a fan of Blue Jay. I've seen him on the DC message board. He's always talking about how they should get Giffen and DeMatteis and McGuire to do a Blue Jay in the Extremist miniseries or something.
Just wait for Rob Liefeld to put him in Hawk and Dove, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, look, there's everybody has a favorite character.
Marvel can bring back Sleepwalker.
Hey, this.
Better than Sandman. Copyright Marvel. But no, you're right. I mean, everybody has a favorite character. I mean, sometimes it's silly Azrael. Sometimes it's not. And
right.
And you know, you can't help but like a character sometimes. So
this,
yeah,
true.
There are
really,
some. What?
No, I was just gonna say, I really like how he's really like open and free about his powers. He really doesn't give a shit about who knows or secret identity or you know.
No, because it's ridiculous. It really is, like, if you honestly think about the secret identity concept, it's a little bit silly.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, you know, you're constantly lying to people. Like, Superman is supposed to be like the most honest guy in the world, but he basically spends his entire life lying to everybody around him.
Yeah.
You know, you can justify it, you know, any way you want to, but he's essentially lying. So, you know, skip past that stuff. You know, make it more open. I think the thing that makes, you know, Lucian work as a character is, you know, because of the relationship that he has with his family and his friends, and particularly the way that he was raised, he's very laid back and very loose. He's just like, you know, hey, I've got superpowers. Whatever.
Hey, that happens when you have hippie parents.
Exactly.
And man, just the interaction, like my son was hit by experimental thingamajig ray, and now he's a walking glow stick who can't wear pants. Hi, Shanti, you look lovely.
Is your mom high? Probably.
Like, I mean, they changed Blue Beetle a little bit in the new DCU. For me, this is a lot closer to what I loved about the Blue Beetle, the Jaime Reyes concept, is that he has that family that knows who he is. He has some friends who knows who he is, and he goes from there.
Right, exactly. I miss that version of the character. I'm not particularly thrilled with what they're doing with him right now. So
yeah, not
I like issue six. I'm digging it so far.
All right.
You never know. It's only six issues in.
That's true. And Bedard is a good writer, and he's writing New Guardians.
No, I have no doubt that Tony is a good writer.
Oh, yeah,
But it's not coming. You know, my dislike of what they're doing stems from the fact that they made Paco a banger.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Deep down, you really want Ted Kord back, don't you?
Hey, Kord Industries is apparently back, so might happen.
You could do a Ted Kord. You could have Ted Kord back, you know, in the DC New, and have it work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have it work very, very well.
Hey, man, I saw that throw out there in the issue of Justice League that Cyborg's OS was written by Ryan Choi. Okay, he's not dead. He's back, motherfuckers. All right. It's as easy as writing it into a comic right now with DC. That's all you got to say. This guy never died. Vibe could still be alive for all we know.
Oh, God.
Please no.
Hey, I'm not saying they should. I'm just saying they could. So
somewhere in the ether lies Brother Power the Geek.
Hey, they're bringing back the Hero Dial. So
yeah, that's true.
That's next,
true.
Man. That's next. So let's go into the fact that that he's adopted. That's,
right.
That's his thing. And I did read that review online that was like, oh, well, his parents are white. And it, like, was it not apparent in the issue? Because
exactly.
I got that immediately.
It's like, duh.
It's like they're hippie parents. I mean,
you got it.
It wasn't even, you know what, honestly, it wasn't even so much that he was complaining that, you know, that the Lucian's parents were Doc and Judy were white. Mm-hmm. It was more that that he assumed that I couldn't draw Korean people for some reason. It's like I couldn't draw Korean adults because they look too Anglo.
What?
I was like, they're white. Get over it.
Seriously.
He's adopted. Get over it.
Yeah. I'm perfectly okay with that. Superman's adopted.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you know what? But I think that's what really, like, they're really, like, Justin and Jimmy have gone out of their way with this book to kind of buck the typical, you know, superhero cliches, or even like the typical comic book cliches. Yes, yeah. He's adopted. He's got no angst about it. He's not longing to meet his birth parents. You know, he loves his parents. They're good people. They run a surf shop. They're hippies. You know, they grow their own food. They drive an electric car. You know, they are who they are. They're the Gateses. They are who they are. You know, and they don't make a big deal about it. And Lucian doesn't make a big deal about it, and you know, everybody's good to go.
For Christ's sake, can people just be happy?
Exactly.
Is that so difficult in comics?
Everybody just wants to be loved. Is that so hard?
Wow, I don't even know who that was trying to be right there, but
Harvey Firestone.
All right. Close enough. I'll give you that.
I have as much gravel.
God. Is there a chance for more after the four? I mean, is that a possibility, or
I don't know. And if there is, I probably wouldn't be involved as far as I know. I don't, you know, I don't really have much of a relationship with DC editorial at the moment.
Oh, of six. My apologies, because sorry, I saw the one.
No,
four.
It's four.
Oh,
it's four.
That was a misprint. Okay,
that was a misprint. Gotcha. DC screwed up.
Gotcha.
Somebody in production screwed up.
Okay.
So it's only four issues. And yeah, so like I was saying, I don't really have a relationship with DC editorial at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they were to do another series or do more, unless they were really killing to get me back, I don't think I would be directly involved with it.
Okay. That's fine. You know, that's the way it works. I mean, hey, you're a free man now. You get to take on other projects, which is nice. So how much of a change is it to go from exclusive back onto the freelance market?
It's still taking a little getting used to. I mean, I'm just as busy as I was before. So
that's good.
You know, it really has in that regard, as far as like work goes, you know, things really haven't changed. I think the big change really is that I'm trying to not only negotiate several different things at the moment, mm-hmm. that, you know, I'm trying to, you know, line my ducks in a row. And I think if at the very least right now, I'm planning on being busy until October.
Awesome.
So, and that's at the very least, like, you know, one thing I can't go into details about, but, you know, is something that I'm going to probably start working on in May.
Okay.
And that's going to be a five-issue thing with a name writer.
Jamal Igle Show, featuring Jamal Igle.
But you know, at the same time, I'm also developing several creator-owned projects, a couple short form, which is already written, which co-wrote years ago with Fred Van Lente.
Oh, nice.
And we might, you know, kick the dust off of that and try and go for a Kickstarter campaign to get the first book done. And but I've also got a couple of other creator-owned projects that are in various stages of like pitchability and just trying to find a creative home for them. Part of the problem is that I've been holding on to this stuff for so long that now I've got like 4 really good ideas.
Right.
I can't decide what to do first.
Hey, that could be a good problem.
It is a good problem to have, but it's also tied into needing to bring in some money as well.
Right.
Needing to have like a semi steady paycheck, and that in that regard, that's why the Kickstarter thing seems to be the way to go, at least to get production seed money going. If not, have a publisher already attached to it, because it's how it is right now. It's very difficult to get any projects really going well. And it's like I don't need a lot of money to get these things done, but you need to the money is really more to carve out that period of time to make sure that the lights stay on.
Well, tell you what. Here's what you do. Okay, you take those 4 projects, you hand them to Brent Cassina. He looks over them, and he figures out which one you should do first.
I was just going to suggest that. If you need a decider, I shall be your decider.
Just as long as it's not George W., then I think you're fine when it comes to deciders.
Okay. Well, he is down in Florida now, so...
Ooh. No. Well, you bring up Kickstarter, and man, holy crap. I mean, you want to talk about something that's just completely exploded when it comes to the comic book world and creativity in general. Like, that's where you go to fund things these days.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially considering what happened with Order of the Stick. Oh, I mean, holy crap.
They asked for like $3,000.
They got $1 million.
They got $1 million. It's insane, man. I mean, and good for them, because, they deserve it. But still, like, that's the power of the internet right there.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. It's like Kickstarter and Indiegogo have suddenly turned into angel capital. That's like the ultimate form of angel capital.
It's true. Yeah, no, it's completely true. And I both of them have their purpose too. I mean, Indiegogo is exactly what it sounds like. It's more for the indie projects and stuff like that. Kickstarter,
right,
a little bit higher up there, a little more, I guess, closer to mainstream.
Right,
but both of them can get you get you going really quickly if you've got a good project.
I think my initial fear really is it's been a very long time since I've even attempted to do anything creator owned. The last creator owned thing that I did was Venture, and that didn't go as well as I had hoped. But we're talking 2003 versus 2012,
right?
So. I think I have
a little more experience under your belt.
Yeah, exactly. The landscape has changed quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
In the interim. So, so we'll see. I'm investigating all possibilities. It's not like I'm abandoning the mainstream of comics, but I am trying to find different ways of making comics and doing comics.
Well, that's good. I mean, come on, man. I'm looking at Kickstarter right now, and Diesel Sweeties is 1,151% funded on their book. $38,554 pledged when they asked for like $3,000 for an ebook. That's what Kickstarter is right now. So I mean, not to put pressure on you, man, but like go out there, get 2,000% immediately. No, I mean,
well,
like,
no. But again, it's like I've got like I was saying, I've got several projects. There's one webcomic project that I might be doing.
Okay,
I'm still trying to work out the details. On that, I think we've got a very specific plan for that. And then of the comic projects, it's like I've got like two stories that are 40 pages, and then like one series idea that's like 12 issues, at least like the first cycle is 12 issues.
Okay,
so and it's different different projects, different types of, different audiences, and I need to sit down and figure out what I want to do first. And in the meantime, working on the other stuff that I'm in the midst of negotiating for. So, right.
Let's talk about the one that was just announced this last weekend. You want to talk about different audiences and different crowds. I mean, you're there right now, man. No, I'm not going to sing. I'm not going to do it.
Doing the Archie versus Kiss comic?
No, I'm not doing the Archie versus Kiss comic. I'm doing the IDW Kiss comic.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I just guessed.
Yes.
Very good singing, Ian. You gave it away.
Thank you. I can name that tune in one note. So, yeah, man, Kiss. How'd this come about?
Okay, well, as my contract with DC was about to run out, I sort of looked around at the landscape and realized I didn't know anybody anymore. So, everybody I knew works at DC.
I'm totally imagining you just like standing on a street corner handing out business cards right now. Hello, would you be
Jamal
my friend?
I am Legend. No one's there.
Dog and all.
So what happened was I sent an email to a couple of industry friends. I sent an email to Chris Roberson and his wife Allison, because I knew Chris was doing a lot of stuff with IDW, and I was like, well, could you introduce me to somebody? Forward my information to some IDW people because I don't really know anybody over there. So I get an email back from Tom Waltz, who's my editor on the book, and he says, well, we've got this thing that we think you might be perfect for, but you have to do a piece of pitch art for it. Now, keep in mind that I haven't done pitch art for anything in 12 years. Especially since 2000, most of my jobs basically is like, hey, you're available? Okay, here, do this.
And now here back to pitch art.
Right. So I was just like, well, okay, but why am I doing pitch art? And he's like, well, because everything has to be approved by the event. They wouldn't tell me what it was at first.
Okay.
And then I was like, I got to carve out some time because I was still working, finishing up the Ray. And I was working on issue three. I was finishing up issue three. And so I was like, yeah, I think I could squeeze it in. And what do you want me to do? And he's like, well, we need you to draw Kiss, but in 1920s gangster outfits.
I could just see the thick the knee pads of Gene Simmons' boots emerging from a pair of slacks.
I can also sort of see the question mark on the bubble on top of Jamal Igle's head when this initially comes up.
Certainly challenging.
Well, basically they sent me photos from their the Dress to Kill photo shoot, and there was like, we need them in outfits like this. Mm-hmm. So, Brent, if you go on my blog, I've got the piece up there.
Okay.
That I did. And it's basically, for the radio listeners out there, it's basically sort of the Kisses, the Untouchables. I found a piece of a photo from New York, 1920s New York. And I researched the suits and the weapons and I did this what I think is a really nice piece with Gene sticking his tongue out, firing Tommy gun into the air.
Oh my god!
He's really focusing on hitting his target with that Tommy gun.
The tongue acts as a wind gauge too.
Such a sniper with that Tommy gun. Jeez.
So I did the art. And I set the pencils because I had every intention of inking it. And Tom was like, no, you don't. I sent it to him. It's like, this looks great. I was like, okay, so do you want me to ink it? It's like, you don't even have to ink it. We'll show it to Gene and Paul. So they showed it to Gene and Paul. and they liked it, and they got back to me and said, okay, because we can, it's going to be rotating our team, so like you can either do issue 1 and 2 or issue 5 and 6 because 3 and 4 are already spoken for. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I can do 1 and 2. That's not a problem.
All right.
So yeah, so I'm doing the first 2 issues of this Kiss series,
and written by Chris Ryle.
Because written by Chris Ryle, it's set in 1929 Chicago, and it's pretty damn cool, actually, all things considered. But, you know, the funny part about it is, you know, as I've been working on the series, 2 things popped into my head. Mm-hmm. One being, I did not realize that I knew as many Kiss songs as I did. Like, I was really just like, oh, that's Kit. What, I know that song. And then now, like, I've really, because I wanted to get, because I know Chris is going to show some of the preview art at the London SuperCon. Mm-hmm. So I was really trying to get like the mannerisms down as well, like the body language for the guys down as well. So I've been watching like a lot of videos and a lot of like the documentaries and everything, so I'm like, totally like kissed out right now. Like
watching that Family Guy episode on loop with the Kiss animated series. Oh my god! All I'm thinking right now is this better be out in time for C2E2 because Chicago is going to eat this up with a spoon.
No, I don't think it's going to be out in time for C2E2. Damn. I think. It's gonna. I think it's coming out. I'm pretty sure it's coming out in June.
Okay.
So, yeah, because May solicitations are already out, so I think it's right. It's coming out for June.
Okay.
So yeah, so I'm penciling and digitally inking myself on this one, and inking the covers by hand because you know that's just me. But I just got the colors back for the color for the cover that I just drew this weekend, and it looks so good. I cannot wait for people to see this.
I am okay. You're gonna get me to buy a fucking Kiss comic, man.
It's cool, man. It's, you know,
I know. I'm just saying, like, when I expected, when I, you know, of all the comics I expected to have in my collection, like. You're gonna get me to buy a Kiss comic. You're gonna freaking,
well, you know, think about it from my perspective. I mean, of all the things that people would even ever expect to see from you, I don't think anybody in their could pay me $1,000 on a bet and would ever name. Well, yeah, Jamal's gonna draw Kiss.
Just don't let Gene near your wife. That's all I got.
Oh,
doesn't Shannon keep him on a short leash these days?
You'd think that would be true based on the A&E show, but you never can tell.
You never know,
this is true.
People probably said the same thing about Bill and Hillary back in the 90s, but
yeah,
that tongue landed on walkabout. You never know.
That's the one thing that keeps coming up is Gene's Gene's legend with women.
Hey, man, no Jew has ever gotten more tail.
This is true. But you know, he has a lovely singing voice.
He does.
Jamal, you could use this as your platform into the Hollywood world and Hollywood parties and coke and heroin and, you know, all that jazz and make for a lovely screenplay 25 years down the line.
Oh, it's too late for that. Film. It's too late for that.
Yeah, man. Dude used to be a bouncer. Been there, done that.
It'd be like Middlemen, but instead of porn, it'd be comic books and rock and roll.
Kiss Me, the Jamal Igle story.
Mild-mannered comic book artist gets caught up in the Hollywood rock and roll scene.
Yes, exactly.
It sounds like a sitcom.
It kind of does, and I don't want to see that sitcom.
Yes, you know, find me, you know, face down in a toilet bowl, strung out on smack.
It could be a mix
praying for better days.
It could be a mix between Shameless and Big Bang Theory.
Oh, my God.
The Big Shame Theory. You set me up for that one, man. Oh, so obviously, what's next is a Hulk Hogan comic. That's
yes, exactly. That's just going to be custom Hollywood comics.com, I guess. I don't know. But the other thing is like I always used to avoid projects like this, mm-hmm. like anything having to do with likenesses or celebrities or that kind of thing. And I'm actually getting it. I've actually really gotten into like trying to draw the 1929 version of Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. So
I just on that concept alone, like you have me there, like 1920s Kiss.
Exactly.
Like who in the 1920s will be wearing that makeup? That's what I want to know.
That's actually one of the gags in the story.
Nice.
they're very self-aware in the story.
Are they going to have a crisis to retcon in the different drummers with their era?
No, but every other Kiss comic is in continuity.
Nice.
Every other? So like yes. One is in continuity, two is not, three is in, four is not?
No. Every Marvel everything. Kiss comics, the Image Kiss comics, McFarlane Kiss comics, they're all in continuity with this story.
So this is like that Crisis on Infinite Turtles thing from a few years ago. I know it has a real name, but I can't help call it that.
I remember watching that show just because I heard you talk about it on this show.
It was a damn good movie, man. It was the last Turtles animated to come out. I think they're still working on the 3D one now.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that's good for you, man. I mean, I hope that this this puts inroads, too, on IDW because, I mean, they've been churning out some good stuff lately.
Well, they've been churning out some good stuff. They've got a lot of named creators working for them now. And Chris seems to really like what I'm doing, and Tom seems to really like what I'm doing, and Gene and Paul seem to like what I'm doing. So, you never know. You never know what's going to happen.
Hey, they're the company that's making Doctor Who Star Trek.
This is true. This is very, very true.
Every single nerd's wet dream right there. Except for Brent.
Why? Oh.
Brent, you're still not into Doctor Who, right?
I'm just hoping that Big Shame Theory, whenever it comes out, is a better representation of the comic book world than Comic Book Men. That's all I have to say.
I refuse to watch Comic Book Men.
I watched the first episode. Oh, it's bad. It's so bad.
I watched the second episode to see if it got any better, and it's just terrible. And I find it funny that the Alan Moore-looking dude actually read his own reviews and responded nastily about it to it back to Comics Alliance. It's like, come on, man. It just proved you're an actual asshole, not just on the show, but in real life.
However, everyone is required by law to watch the season finale featuring Raphael Suhu.
Really?
Yes.
How did that happen?
It's a trivia contest between Midtown Comics and their place.
And Raph is the trivia man.
Raph apparently is painted to be an asshole in the episode. According,
how does he know he's already been painted that way?
Because this is Raph's words, so we'll see whether that actually happens. But
did Raph get paid for his participation?
I'm not 100% certain on that, but I certainly hope so. No, he got paid for a day's work. He did get paid for a day's work.
Okay.
So that's it? He didn't get scale at least?
I'm not sure exactly. You'll have to talk to Raph. All I know
not
is
not enough to move out of mom and dad's, I guess.
He did.
He didn't hit it
he
big.
He did. No, he did. He's living on his own now.
Oh, holy shit. Yeah. I'm so behind.
Yeah, he's living in his own project. But either way, though, no, that's the episode of Comic Book Men. You got to watch the season finale just so you can see. Like, I mean, seriously, I'm going to be sitting there with Raph. We're going to be, getting drunk off our ass MST3K-ing the episode.
I'm just upset that, they during the podcasting section, the Walt Flanagan guy looks like he's, hungover and... it's like it's television. You couldn't put a makeup on this guy or have him fix his hair and
look a little
less disgruntled.
They did put makeup on him and they did fix his hair. That's the best they could get.
Wow. It's just, it's a poor excuse for presentability for national audience, I don't know.
Yes. isn't the only reason why Walt Flanagan is even on the show is the fact that he's been like friends with Kevin Smith since they were like 12 or something.
That's
like that.
That's the only reason he got to draw those Batman comics.
Yeah. Batman Cacophony. Which I gave away for $1 a piece at New York Comic Con. I picked up 2 issues of it, and I read the first, and then I never read the second, and it immediately went in my box to be given away.
The Widening Gyre is pretty good. That's pretty interesting yarn.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. And isn't it like gear, or like, is it actually gyre? Gear, or?
I don't know. If it's in your library, I would say pick it up.
I shy away from things that make me that have to be pronounced properly. That's that's my problem, Mr. Jamal Eagle. So that's everything that's been announced so far. But
that's everything.
All right.
That's everything that's been announced so far that I can talk about at the moment.
All right. Okay. That's good. That's good.
Well, once you let me decide, we can talk about more on the show.
So let's talk a little bit about actually your travels over the past couple of months, man. I mean, you've been everywhere. Like, I mean, countries I didn't even know existed, and going to comic conventions all over the place, man. You're a globetrotter.
Yeah, it last year was a very interesting year. This year is turning into a very interesting year as well,
for different reasons.
For different reasons, but you know, both for very cool reasons. Yeah, last October I was in Macedonia.
Macedonia, wow.
Yes, I was in Macedonia for a week. I was there on behalf of the U.S. State Department.
Nice.
What? Yeah.
On behalf of the U.S. State Department.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God! You get to say that.
Yes.
What's it like over there?
It's becoming very westernized, which is it's a good and kind of a bad thing at the same time, because they are just coming out of basically almost 20 years of war.
Right.
And they're trying to rebuild their infrastructure, and there's still infighting between the Macedonian government and Greece. Greece is blocking them from trying to join the European Union. There's just, they don't, there's still arguments over, the claim of Alexander the Great culturally. So there's a lot of stuff that they're dealing with in that regard, they don't really have much of, in terms of rule of law, because they're still trying to rebuild their society in a lot of ways.
Right.
But on the other hand, they are an incredibly gracious and friendly people, and I had a great time.
Good.
And the reason why I say, the good part about that part of the world embracing Western culture is that I was making Big Lebowski jokes with people from Macedonia and Albania.
It was a good rug, man.
Exactly. It really brought the room together.
Like, how up to date on their comics are they over there? Like,
they're fairly up to date, but they're the only monthly comic that's available is Disney Adventures.
Oh wow! Okay,
if that's it. Okay. Like, Mickey Mouse Adventures is the only comic that they can, the only physical comic that they can get without having to go through Amazon in England to get trade paperbacks. There is not a single comic book shop in the entire country.
Wow.
And a lot of what they do read monthly, they get from pirate downloads. Not because they don't want to pay for it. It's the only way they can get it.
Right.
Yeah. But they still have access to
stuff.
Right, because they still have access to the internet. They still, they're still on Facebook. They're still on Twitter. They're still reading all the news sites. They want to read the comics, and DC and Marvel are not exactly going out of their way to make the comics available to them.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's political. I guess that's a whole political situation that they don't even want to go near.
Well, you know, not even not really, but I mean, there's still, you know, issues in terms of money. I mean, a lot of the people in the country only live on about 200 euros a month.
Okay.
You know, so there's, I mean, but again, you know, they make do with what they have, and you know, what they have is a very rich culture. I met a lot of guys who want to draw for DC and Marvel. You know, like one of the workshops that I did was just, you know, sitting, you know, it started as like one of my standard teaching workshops. And then we were just talking about geek shit for an hour.
Nice. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, no, it was great. And then in December, I was in Caracas, Venezuela.
Oh,
which
wow.
was also amazing. And amazing in a different way. Because the thing about the trip to Macedonia, I was in three different cities in Macedonia. Mm-hmm. I was doing like TV and print interviews in every city that I went to. I was actually supposed to do a children's television show, but I missed it. And actually, I should back up a little bit, because here's what happened. My flight out of JFK was delayed by 2.5 hours for mechanical problems. Mm-hmm. So the entire time I'm on the plane, I'm like, is there any way that you can go faster? Is there any way you can go faster? Because I had a connection in Prague.
Oh.
So I missed my connection in Prague. So I ended up staying in Prague for a day.
Okay.
Which, you know, I was pissed off at first, but then I got over it and
went
to little town Prague and, you know, took some photos and, you know, really had a good time with it. And then I finally get back to the airport. I fly to Skopje, which is the capital city of Macedonia. Borka, my translator, was there waiting for me, and she had a black and white, like a printout. She had printed out one of my Supergirl drawings, mm-hmm. and her daughters had colored it.
Aw.
Awesome. You know, with a little, and then said, you know, hi, Jamal. You know? But I had to go immediately from the airport to my first lecture at the university.
Okay.
So I was pretty much on the run, like, the entire time I was there.
I'm just imagining Beatlemania with you.
It felt like it. Like, one of the workshops I did was in Bitola, which is a small city about an hour south of Skopje. Mm-hmm. And it was during a film festival. And I was on stage in an auditorium of about 75 people, like, giving this comics lecture. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it felt like it, because, you know, I had to come off stage and talk to, you know, somebody from the press. And then, you know, I'd go back on stage and I was looking at portfolios, and then people started shoving sketchbooks in front of me and asking for sketches. And, you know, I'm being pulled away and like, no, you know, he can't do this. He has to go. You know, I really did feel like a rock star there, you know.
Perfect for your new Kiss comic. All right.
Exactly. And that was awesome. You know, I got to meet the staff from the U.S. Embassy and had drinks with them, and, you know, cool. For, you know, the director of mission,
nice,
Brian Aguilar and his wife, and, you know, their team, and, you know, they were very, very cool to me. And it was actually really funny, because, you know, they were very, and like when we were talking, they were like very intent. Like, they were asking me all these questions about the business and, you know, and about my work. And I was like, what? I mean, you know, this is, I want to talk about you guys. I was like, we don't want to talk about us. We're policy geeks. You know, all we do is talk to diplomats. We want to talk to you. You're cool.
You know? Yeah, no, they want to talk to you and be like, in issue 53.
Well, that's funny. That's funny, because Kim Spivak, who's one of the staff at the embassy, she and her husband and her son, Isaac, picked me up, mm-hmm. and he had a copy of the DC Encyclopedia with him.
Nice.
So as we were, when we got to the house, I did a Superman sketch for him in the cover and signed it.
Oh, that's really cool. So yeah, so children's TV, huh?
Children's TV, yeah. So I was supposed to do this kids' TV show, but because I missed my flight, I didn't get there in time. So I was a little disappointed. It was going to be like this, it's like this kind of like Sesame Street style show.
Yeah, I was gonna say Macedonian Sesame Street.
Yeah, exactly. I was supposed to come on and talk to one of the puppet performers about drawing, and you know, they were really excited. They sent me a script and everything, and it was just like. And I was really just I was really disappointed that I couldn't do it because I thought it would have been a lot of fun. So
it sounds like, can you say Kara Zor-El? Yeah, I knew you could.
But yeah, so that was fun. And then, you know, I went to Caracas, to the Caracas Comic Con in December. Mm-hmm. And that was, oh man, Caracas is such a beautiful city. It really just, and again, you know, the same thing is like you get outside of the U.S. and the two things will strike you funny first, which is how many people speak English fluently.
You wouldn't expect that, and yet
right, you wouldn't expect that. Like they speak English fluently without an accent.
Wow,
which really surprised me, and like just how like friendly and welcoming they are. Like, you know, just, you know, no attitudes, no pretension. You know, even as big a city as, you know, Caracas is, or even Macedonia, like everybody was really friendly and just really embracing. And, you know, the trip to Caracas was, again, you know, it's like one of these rock star situations where I'm talking to radio and I'm doing, you know, blog interviews and podcasts and TV interviews. And then on top of everything else, like they had a stage set up where everything, like all the audio visual stuff. So they were like the first day of the convention, they had all of the guests, you know, sitting on stage, and they were introducing each guest. And they have Jesus Hernandez, who's the Latin American voice of Robin and Kid Flash.
Oh,
and
dude.
Nightwing and a bunch of other characters, and then Hector, who is the basically the Kevin Conroy of Latin America. Like, he does all the Batman voices on like every, like
Esperiontes, Esperte.
Another artist, Jose Mazzarelli, who does a lot of Disney comics, and you know, he's done some stuff for like Moonstone and for, you know, Dynamite, and but the superstar, mm-hmm, was an actress named Cecilia. And she is the voice of this anime character called Candy Candy.
Uh-huh.
And Candy Candy, like, I'd never heard of Candy Candy, but Candy Candy apparently in Latin America is, like, huge. And it's basically this, like, this young romance show.
Okay.
But you had, you know, girls cosplaying. It's like this sort of, like, this character in, like, you know, curls and, a petticoat and... Hmm. And you had these girls in like these giant hoop dresses and petticoats cosplaying Candy Candy, and like she was the superstar of like the whole show. So, you know, so they introduced me, and when we were in the VIP room, like we were all talking, and I did a little bit of singing. So the guy who was introducing us, who works for the local music station, he's a music jock, and he asked me to sing.
Okay.
On stage.
Okay.
So I did.
Nice. And you won the Caracas Idol.
Yes, I won Caracas Idol, and I got an arepa.
And, ooh, arepas.
And an Argentinian bottle of Coca-Cola.
Nice. Man, I'm looking up Candy Candy on Wikipedia. This thing's been around since 1975.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The anime came out originally in 1978, and there was an anime film in 1992. And yet I've never heard of this. What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is one of those things where you become aware of a much larger world. Mm-hmm. Like in Latin America, there, like one of the people that I met is the the editor and creator of the largest selling comic book in Venezuela.
Oh, wow.
And it's a book called Jaimito.
Okay.
And basically what Jaimito is, it's a joke. It's like a standard joke. It's a Jaimito is basically a little kid. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty much dirty jokes. But what he did was he trademarked Jaimito. Like, this is like a cultural thing that he got the name Jaimito trademarked and created a comic book. Okay. And he sells like 500,000 copies a month.
Oh my God. Okay, you just said the words 500,000 copies a month.
Exactly.
And comics in the same sentence.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, remember the days?
Oh.
Holy crap, man. That's
hey, if you go outside of the United States, that still happens.
Oh my God.
That still happens.
I'm depressed now. I need another beer.
You should be. I get depressed. It's like he's in the middle of like negotiating for like a Jaimito video game and a cartoon series, and it's all basically because he had the idea to trademark this because nobody else did.
Wow. That's crazy stuff, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, I'm glad that you learned so much on these trips, man.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's good sometimes to become part of a wider world, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no. I mean, like, I'm looking forward to finally getting out of this country and going and checking stuff out, cuz I mean, now that I'm actually gainfully employed, we can probably finally start taking trips like Chris and I have wanted to. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to hit Iceland at some point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because that's, for one thing, it's cheap because their economy sort of exploded a few years ago and they haven't quite mm-hmm. recovered yet. So, you know, we can take full advantage of that.
True.
It's like, ooh, cheap airfare. Ooh, cheap hotels. Ooh, cheap everything. Okay. And definitely want to take a trip to Japan at some point because, you know, anime nerd can't help but go there at least once. But
no, trust me, I'm right there with you. That's the dream trip. I've been wanting to go to Japan since I was in high school.
Nice, fantastic. And Brent, get on making an American comic, sell 500,000. Like, get the word out. All right, make it happen.
Well, if I get to decide something, I can decide how to get Mr. Igel's creator-owned comic into the next big sitcom or movie film. I'm already full of ideas just to base around the personality itself. Now, if I had a property to work with, you never know where we could take things. We could be the next – you could be the next Mark Millar, Jamal.
We could be the next creator of Jaimito.
This is true. You know, according to Mark, all you need is a mundane premise and just give the character superpowers.
Oh.
Hey, his words, not mine.
I know, but it's absolutely true. And a name that pops, like Kick-Ass.
Yes, exactly.
Ugh, man, well, that's awesome. Everything's awesome right now, and I am depressed.
Why are you depressed?
Because we can't sell 500,000 comics, man, and that's sad.
We could if we didn't narrow the focus to just superheroes.
So let's do it. Let's make it happen.
People are trying. I mean, I think Order of the Stick having this success with Kickstarter
is definitely.
You know, going to show a few people, hey, wait a minute. You know, if we do something that isn't capes and tights, and believe me, I love capes and tights. I do.
But there's other stuff out there, yeah.
There is other stuff out there. And even in terms of like some of the properties that I want to do, they do have, you know, sort of a fantasy bent to them, but they're not, you know, the typical superhero story.
Oh, yeah.
They're not about. One in particular isn't, you know, while it's based around superpowers, it's not about people running around in costumes taking the crap out of each other.
You mean something different? What?
It's something different. Oh, my God.
You mean instead of Wonder Woman, her name isn't Fantastic Woman?
Oh.
Instead of Superman, it's not Awesome Dude?
No. My goal... Ultimately, in all this is to shake up the paradigm a little bit. You know, as much as I love superpowers and superheroes, if we can do, something that doesn't necessarily have to be, it's hard to do something that's completely wholly original. But if you can do something that isn't cliche,
right?
That doesn't fall into the same trap that superhero comics always fall into, then I think that would be a shot in the right direction. And then at the same time, let's get some other stuff out there, man.
Hell yeah! Hell yeah.
Let's get some other books out there, some other genres.
That would be
people
nice.
Were crying for it.
Yeah,
I
mean, the success of Walking Dead says stuff like that. That the series has taken off as it is, and that the TV show has taken off as it is. People are starting to realize that there's other shit out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's hard to get that exposure, but once it's there, it's there. You can't take that away, and that's important. You look on Amazon's top 10 list for graphic novels. Like, half that stuff is in superhero. More than half of that is in superhero. And that's very telling. When Scott Pilgrim was coming out, that was top of the charts every single month. And that's something special right there that you gotta take with you, and you gotta drill it home that there's other stuff out there other than that guy with the S symbol on his chest and the dude with the bat.
Right.
That's it. And that guy who was
even DC could be doing that, but they don't. There's a lot of mid to low selling books that could use the kind of promotion that they're giving to, the stuff that's on the top 10, right. But they won't do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. And, you could say the same for Marvel. You could say the same that for a whole bunch of companies. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I will point out real quick that Marvel, specifically with what's coming out with the Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, new Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, like, let's see more of that. Let's see more, reimaginings, new characters that have just genuine fun to them. Like the Ray. Like what I got out of that. I need more of that in my comics. Like, everyone doesn't have to be sad and depressed every 8 seconds,
No, I agree with you. I think the problem, unfortunately, is that I think that, DC and Marvel are pretty much given up on trying to do anything all ages, except for stuff that's directly tied into the cartoons,
right.
because whether that's like a Disney mandate or whatever,
which you totally can't tell by Rob Liefeld writing 3 books, but anyway, not gonna get into that. Not gonna make that.
He's not writing them. He's just co-plotting them.
Oh.
So, of course, Deathstroke has to go into space and fight Lobo, because that's what 12-year-olds like.
They have a battle of the pouches.
Oh.
Oh, God. Yeah, they're gonna out-cigar smoke each other. And Hawkman can have even more pouches.
Hawkman finally got a good artist, got Joe Bennett on there, so maybe it'll finally be readable.
All right.
I never know.
That's good. It's possible. I wanted to point out real quick, though, going back to the Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, I love that his high school that he goes to is an amalgam of the high school that I went to and the other high school in Brooklyn. Like,
right.
Literally, in appearance, it's Morrow and Midwood combined into one high school. Like, that is...
Because there can only be one.
There can only be one.
I just want them to get a regular artist, like an artist on the book that stays with the book.
Isn't Sarah Pacelli the regular artist?
Yeah, but she's got Chris filling in for 2 issues, and then the last previews had somebody else jumping on.
That doesn't bother me. I like Chris Somney.
I enjoy Chris Somney as well, man. You're like the one dude who doesn't like Chris Somney.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm just saying, it's compared to the legendary stuff they had with the last series with Bagley and Eminem doing so many issues in a row, I think it's just kind of shines poorly on the legacy. I know Bagley is like a freak of nature.
Yeah, Bagley's a freak of nature. Stewart is—he's like me. He's a workman. We know what it takes to put in the time to develop a series and to develop a run.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure Mark Bakley draws in his sleep, like literally, like he just has a freaking pencil in his hand and just draws shit while he's sleeping.
He sleeps on the right side of the bed on his back. He's got his drawing table, like his drawing right next to him, hanging off the bed. He just sketches.
It's just like it's like an EKG, you know.
He's literally an episode of Fringe. Like Olivia Dunham would investigate him if this was the Fringe universe. let's end this with what books you enjoying right now, Jamal? What's catching your interest?
Let's see. Winter Soldier is really good. Because awesome. you cannot go wrong with Ed Brubaker and Jackson Geis.
Oh yeah!
I mean, that, oh my God, it's so pretty. It's so pretty. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. I'm digging a lot. I like what they're doing with Miles Morales. I think it's actually, you know what? It's refreshing.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of the Bendis of old. Mm-hmm. Before he got stretched apart by every Avengers book in creation.
Yeah.
So
back before he was writing 12 books exactly.
Exactly. Let's see what else. Rachel Rising, which is also really good. Terry Moore.
Terry Moore. Okay. Yeah. I haven't actually picked that up. What's it about?
It's about a woman who was murdered, but you don't know who killed her, and she comes back from the dead.
Okay.
And nobody recognizes her, even though she still looks the same. And then there's this creepy little girl who either is like a complete psychotic herself, mm-hmm. or has some like this magical imaginary friend who like kills people for her. Yeah, it's creepy. It's much creepier than Strangers in Paradise or anything he's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's good. It's really, really good.
All right, that'll be a trade for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I will wrap up my current list right now with Wolverine and the X-Men,
yes.
which is the only X-Men book that I'm reading.
Oh, dude. God, man. Like I could talk about Wolverine and the X-Men for 4 hours, seriously. Like, it's just so much fun. Dupe is the secretary.
But it's the kind of book where you kind of, like, I kind of knew from his Wolverine run, like the early parts of his Wolverine run and Get Mystique, that he had it in him,
mm-hmm.
like that level of humor.
Yep.
But now that it's coming out, like Jason Aaron is really funny.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Dan Slott level funny.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I love Brew. Man, I mean, it just the concepts that he throws out there. Like I really never expected there to be the son of Gladiator and a smart brood on the X-Men at the same time. But there they are.
There they are. That is them tossed in with Quentin Quire.
I'm going to have to pick up the Brian Wood miniseries as a collection eventually, because I've been hearing good things about that.
Not as good. I think the voice that Jason gives Quentin Quire especially is much stronger.
Okay.
In Wolverine and the X-Men.
All right. Good to know. Good to know. Any other things you wanted to bring up, Jamal?
Let me see. I'm reading a lot. That's the thing. I'm still reading The Boys. I'm still.
Dude, I'm a year behind on The Boys. I swear, I have it all filed, ready to read, and I am
still reading. Still reading Fables. Still reading Batman. Nice. Batman's kicking ass on all cylinders. Still reading Action Comics. That's the only Superman book that I'm reading right now.
Mm-hmm.
Um,
which has been good. I've been enjoying it.
It's been really good, and unfortunately, the other books suffer like Tony Daniel on Detective, who I like,
mm-hmm.
but they suffer in comparison when you have if you stack
Scott
it up
Snyder
against
on
Batman.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah, and I mean, we've brought this up on the show before. Other people have brought it up too. Like, they really should have switched the names. Like, Scott Snyder's is so much more of a detective book.
Right.
And then what Tony Daniel is doing, that I feel like that deserve the title of Detective Comics, and Tony Daniels should be on Batman. But I guess they figured, you know, Scott Snyder is going to be the more popular title. They'll go right with the Batman name to get more people to it.
Right. But, you know, and part of the reason why, you know, I'm happy for Scott and for Greg, you know, Greg in particular, because I think, you know, after all the work that he's put in for years and years, the attention that he's getting now because of Batman is well deserved.
Oh, yeah.
Comeback of the decade right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my God. You know,
but to quote LL Cool J, don't call it a comeback.
Right. It's been around forever.
Yeah, and now LL Cool J is literally saying that. Come on, man. He's on NCIS Los Angeles.
Like, please, let me do something cool. I'm LL Cool J. Word.
And once again, this episode is sponsored by DCBS, DCBService.com. Go ahead and check them out. 50% off this month for Batman Earth 1, the hardcover by Jeff Johns and Gary Frank, as finally we get the first chapter of what this modern take on Batman will be like. Mind the Gap number 1 is $1.49 this month, 50% off. We got Kick-Ass 2, the premium hardcover, 40% off for $14.99. Fury Max number 1 launches this month with Garth Ennis and Gordon Parlov reuniting. Yes, the same team that brought you Fury number 1 back in the day from Marvel Max is back for Fury Max number 1. This should be really good stuff, and a whole bunch more you can find on DCBS. Check them out at dcbservice.com. Use the promo code CT8 when you check out if this is your first time, and you will get 8% off on your first order. And don't forget, yet again, that if you want to get the 6 books of DC's second wave, that's Earth 2 number 1, World's Finest number 1, Batman Inc. number 1, Dial H number 1, GI Combat number 1, and The Ravagers number 1, you can get them in a combo pack for 50% off retail price. You ain't going to pay $19.94, you're going to pay $9.97, and you're going to be happy that you've done it. Check them out, dcbservice.com, and as always, we thank them for their support.
All right, man. Give your website to everyone, and once again, pimp whatever you got.
All right, so it is jamaligle.com, JAMALIGLE.com, and you can find me anywhere on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Formspring. I don't know. Do I still have my no?
No one, have a no one still has a MySpace, no.
Yeah, I don't have a MySpace page anymore.
No,
Friendster. Oh, my God. I still have a ComicSpace page.
Yeah, so that do I. Place got,
that place got abandoned like the Wild Wild West, man.
Like, once Facebook added groups, like, that was exactly. That was the death knell, man.
So, and then, okay, so The Ray number 3 comes out on Wednesday the 22nd. Mm-hmm. Ray number 4 comes out in March, mid-March, I think.
Cool.
And then I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, I'm gonna throw this out here right now, that I think Kiss number 1 from IDW comes out in June. So, I'll be hitting the convention circuit. I'm going to C2E2. I will be at Heroes Con this year because I missed it last year. Where else am I going? San Diego, mm-hmm. New York.
Awesome.
I'll be in Asbury Park in May at the Asbury Comic Con.
I've been thinking about that actually because. Isn't it literally just like run out of like a gym or something? Or?
No, a bar.
Oh, bar. A bar. That's
bowling
what it is.
Alley.
Okay. A bowling alley. Okay. All right.
And a bar.
Okay. I will try to make
Boston
it.
And also, I'm going to be in Boston at the Boston Comic Con.
Sweet.
Did they play that Springsteen album on repeat while you're there?
God, I hope not.
Yeah, well, that like my con schedule is a little less this year than it was in previous years. Like, I'm definitely gonna make it to one day of the super show replacement. At least one day of Super Wild Pig Con.
You're going to London?
No. London Super Show I wish I was going to. Super Convention, sorry. But, dude, I mean, and oh my God, the way that thing took off. I mean, literally everybody is going to be at London Super Convention. Like, I'm pretty sure the ghost of Jack Kirby is going to be there.
Well, yeah, they're all there to see Jamal Engel.
Obviously. But, yeah, and I'm not going to make C2E2 this year. I will obviously be at New York because I can walk there and, well, okay, after a train. And I think that's kind of it when it comes to comic conventions, but I will try and make Asbury because that sounds freaking awesome. Bowling alley. Brent, you got anything to add?
I would just say for people, if you haven't seen any of Jamal's work or if you haven't read The Ray, go on your local digital comic site, i.e. Comixology, and pick those issues up. They're $1.99 a piece now, 1 and 2. And if you enjoy them so much, go ahead and buy 3 at the regular price. Let's show Jamal how much we love them, because it's really a fantastic and underrated series that isn't getting enough love.
Show him how much you care.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's my singing for the night. All right, that's done there. And yeah, Jamal, we should hang out sometime since it's
absolutely,
yeah, definitely,
as very very soon, actually, as soon as my schedule clears up again.
All good.
Well, he's just traveling for the State Department and stuff like that. You know? He doesn't have time for lowly podcasters like you.
Well, I'll keep an eye out for the next time you're at Comic Book Club, and then I'll just
Yeah, hijack me, and we'll go and have sushi again.
All good, all good. All right, I think that's basically it here. Brent, you got nothing else to add, and you weren't at MegaCon this year, so no interviews from you, so sad panda, but you were tending to sick people, so it's all good.
Yes, yes. Right. I didn't want to have an interview show and then release it 3 months later, so...
I still haven't released last year's Super Show interviews. I still haven't. In fact, I'm thinking I'll just wait exactly a year and then release it.
In the absence of one this year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, dude, that's totally it. Like, I'm going to totally fool people into thinking that there's a Super Show this year. Just, like, release it on Free Comic Book Day like it was going to be, and we'll work it like that. But once again, Jamal, man, thanks for joining us, and we'll definitely catch you again once you got
something. All right. Thanks, Ian, Brent. Thank you for having me on the show again.
All right, and the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check the forums at the road with comicforums.com, virtually hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. They're not gone just because of Deemer. They still live. And we're proud members of Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com and the League Comic Book Podcast over at comicbooknoise.com/league. And check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/comic timing. So for Jamal and for Brent, I'm Ian Levesey, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics. Kiss!
We took her to the doctor on Sunday, took Amanda, and they were like, yeah, you don't have any A or B flu, but here's some Tamiflu, and off you go. And it's like, they didn't give her anything else, so we took her to the doctor again today, because she hadn't gotten any better, and they gave her, like, a giant shot in her ass and something else, some heavy cough syrup and stuff like that.
They didn't need to give her the giant shot in the ass, they just felt like it.
Well, they did. I guess it got rid of all her chills and aches and stuff. So that was the most ingratiating part, is hearing her complain all the time, you know.
Was it
like,
one of those?
Can't do anything about it.
Was it one of those giant, like, Three Stooges-style needles?
No, it wasn't that big. But I was in the doctor's office and I saw it. I was like, oh my goodness.
Man, those kids, they're just germ machines, I'll tell you.
Yeah, big time.
Germ machines.
It's germs, I said germs. So you work in IT?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you turn it off and on again?
On a regular basis, actually. The most popular thing I have to tell people is press F5 to refresh. Oh, God. And the best part is like, whenever we don't have any events doing, like, I'm literally sitting there either watching Amazon streaming or Netflix or playing Xbox.
Wait, you play Xbox?
Yeah.
At your job?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a projector and everything.
Oh, shame on you.
Nice work to be creative.
That's disgusting. Even Jamal can't do that.
This is true.
He works from home.
Well, it's kind of hard to play Xbox and draw at the same time.
Lord knows I've tried.
And the funny thing is, I know you have. All right, so...